Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a busy docket, so let's get to it. First, a lot of talk about this Rogel Aguilera Medeiros case here in Colorado, 110-year sentence. Kim Potter, the taser cop, well, she took the stand today, and the defense rest. Ghislaine Maxwell's trial may actually be done today as well. Harvey Weinstein. Sounds like he may be getting a new trial. Oh, for the reason that I was concerned about the prosecution doing, we'll talk about that. Now, should Alec Baldwin be scared? And next, a pedo hosting child sleepovers. I'm shocked. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. This is Crime Talk. It is Friday, December 17th, 2021. All right, if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you get notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And wow, did we have a bunch of downloads for our podcast that went up the other day. So thanks for downloading us. When you can't watch us, you can download us on any of your favorite podcasting apps. All right, let's get to the docket. There's been a lot of talk the last couple of days, and it's frankly, a lot of people are just going crazy over this, but there's this trucker. His name is Rogel Aguilera Medeiros. Well, he was sentenced on Monday to 110 years in prison for causing a crash on Interstate 70 near Golden, Colorado. And four people were killed on April 25th of 2019. Now, since his sentencing, a wave of support for Aguilera Medeiros is gathering online. A petition that has been set up for his name to offer commutation has been set up, and it's going to the governor. And these people want the governor to grant clemency to Rogel Lazario Aguilera Medeiros. All right, they've collected 2.7 million signatures. Now, Mr. Medeiros is a Cuban immigrant and has contacts with the League of Latin American Citizens, and they are calling on the governor here in Colorado, Jared Polis, to pardon or to commute his sentence. Now, the league also says that it was working on registering a formal complaint of gross misconduct with the Colorado Bar Association against the First Judicial District, Alexis King, for abuse of power and official oppression under the color of law in filing charges against what they believe to be an innocent truck driver who was behind the wheel when his truck's brakes failed. Well, first of all, Alexis King wasn't the DA when the charges were originally filed. King's office has issued a statement, and it said the sentence, which our office requested the minimum sentence, is within the purview of the court and reflects the judgment of the legislature. District Attorney King also wasn't the person, as she stated, who filed the charges against Medeiros. It was the previous district attorney, Peter Ware. Her official response notes that just as the law mandates this outcome, it also provides future opportunity to revisit the sentence. During Mr. Medeiros' trial this past fall, prosecutors portrayed Mr. Medeiros as a reckless individual, while the defense team cast him as a victim of numerous mechanical problems with his truck. Now, Mr. Medeiros testified, and he considered several options when he realized his brakes had failed, including driving onto the grassy median that separates the eastbound and westbound I-70 lanes near what they call the Colorado Mills area or the mall. But he feared that he'd wind up in the path of oncoming traffic on the other side of the highway and that smashing directly into the bridge would cause an explosion, according to his testimony. So he said he attempted to try to slow down by swerving, but unfortunately that didn't prevent the tragedy. Now, in the end, Medeiros was found guilty of 27 of the original 41 charges against him. Included in the guilty verdicts were four counts of vehicular homicide, six counts of assault in the first degree, extreme indifference, and 10 counts of attempted assault in the first degree, extreme indifference. There were also two counts of vehicular assault reckless and one count of reckless driving and four counts of careless driving causing death. Now, Mr. Medeiros told investigators his brakes failed, yet the district attorney in this case charged him with the first degree assault and attempted first degree assault. These are considered crimes of violence under Colorado law and therefore they have mandatory sentencing convictions, which must run consecutively, which totaled the 110 years. Now, Medeiros was not charged with driving under the influence, but the jury found him guilty of not using a runaway truck ramp when he passed it immediately before the fatal crash. Now, Medeiros had testified that he did not see the runaway truck ramp or the signs. Ultimately, the jury found Mr. Medeiros guilty. So what's the big issue here? Was this more than likely a vehicular homicide case, extreme indifference? What's extreme indifference? Basically, complete disregard for the safety of individuals. When you know your brakes are not working properly or going out, you probably should take reasonable precautions to not drive or stop immediately. And that would have been the appropriate charge, in my humble opinion. And obviously, Mr. Medeiros was found guilty of those charges. But the district attorney, in typical fashion, overcharges the situation. They charged first-degree assault. First-degree assault, extreme indifference, is basically that you intended, by your complete disregard of every situation out there, basically it's the equivalent of shooting a firearm into a crowded house. That is extreme indifference, and that's what the jury concluded in this particular case. Now, the jury could have found him not guilty, but they believed that there was sufficient evidence for the charge. All right, he was convicted. My understanding through plea negotiations and a statement by the district attorney was that Mr. Medeiros would only consider taking a guilty plea to a traffic offense. Other than that, he wasn't interested in taking a plea bargain. So he went to trial and rolled the dice. Well, welcome to the judicial system, ladies and gentlemen. Can you blame the prosecutors? Maybe they could have not filed those charges if they thought that it was overkill, but they didn't. They let the jury decide. Can you blame the judge? Well, the judge was brought in as the visiting judge, and he imposed the minimum sentence of 110 years. Now, a motion to reconsider can be filed within 128 days, even on a case where there is a crime of violence. I can tell you, I don't think I've ever had one of those granted, particularly in a crime of violence case. The reality of it is, it's the court saying, hey, you don't like the law? Don't blame me. Go talk to the legislature. I'm just following the law, which is what judges are supposed to do. 110 years, I don't know, for the death of four innocent people? Some people would say, not enough. Clearly, it's a life sentence. He'll never get out. Even under our sentencing scheme in Colorado, 110 years. Even on a crime of violence where you're supposed to serve 75% with good time, earned time credit, he'll probably get eligible for parole about 50%, which would still make him a very old man if he were to get out. It's good that Mr. Medeiros obviously has people supporting him. That's a very good factor. His first attorney in this particular case, well, he was disbarred. He had some legal issues going on. He has another gentleman that was his attorney throughout the trial, a guy by the name of Jim Colgan. He's a former prosecutor. He bounced around a lot of district attorney's offices and then ultimately has gone into private practice. It's unclear whether they had the financial resources to properly defend this case, where there were enough experts, so to speak, that could have testified that there's no way that this, in fact, could have been avoided. We will have to wait and see if the governor is going to do something. My guess is he's going to say he's going to leave it to the courts and maybe apply for clemency in the future. Just because somebody who people don't think should go to jail or prison in this particular case for a long time, like I said, talk to your legislator. Everybody likes mandatory minimum sentences until there's that one case where people think, wow, that seems really harsh. Or it's a family member, or it's a defendant who never thought that he'd be in this particular situation. All of a sudden, that seems a little harsh. So we get judges that are appointed here, and they're supposed to be there to make the hard decisions as to what case warrants prison and a lengthy sentence and those that don't. But when the legislature takes that decision-making out of the judge's hands, this is what you get. Let me know what you think. Too much time? Not enough time? A lot of people have lots of opinions on this. Next on the docket, Kim Potter. Remember her? The taser cop, or we should say former Minneapolis taser cop. Well, she took the stand today in her manslaughter trial regarding the death of Dante Wright. Now, the defense began its case Thursday after prosecutors spent a week calling a bunch of witnesses to build their case that Potter was this experienced police officer who was thoroughly trained to use a taser and knew the dangers of confusing a taser and her handgun. Now, Potter's attorneys have also said that she would have been justified in using deadly force to stop Mr. Wright from driving away and possibly dragging one of Potter's fellow officers. The prosecutors have to prove reckless and culpable negligence in order to achieve a conviction on the manslaughter charge. Former Officer Potter actually did pretty well on the witness stand. I was able to see her testimony here today. The cross-examination by the prosecution was one of the worst cross-examinations I've ever seen by a prosecutor. But you have to remember why prosecutors suck at cross-examination is they rarely get to do it. What the prosecution should have done was simply walk Miss Potter through the scene, no matter how long it took and how emotional she got, and have her state in her own words that she was trained on this and that she has a duty as a police officer to make good decisions based upon that training. And that, well, she blew it. And the result of her blowing and making that big mistake, that one big mistake, is that there's a dead person there. The bottom line is, I wouldn't want to be a juror on this particular case. Miss Potter seems like she's been a good police officer over the years. She also seems like one of those police officers that really doesn't get out that much. And frankly, when the lack of better term, the stuff hit the fan, that one moment of stress, she abandoned all of her training that she should have used and had that muscle memory to go for the taser, not the firearm. Let's face it, she screwed up. If the jury wants to convict her and say, hey, you were negligent, you should have done a better job, there is sufficient evidence to do that. If the jury doesn't want to convict her, all they have to do is say, you know what, we'll listen to what the defense has to say. And that Dante Wright guy, basically, he shouldn't have been trying to get away and justify the whole shooting based upon Officer Potter being justified in using deadly force. Possibly a stretch, but that's there for the jury to hang their hat on. I don't know what the jury's going to do. Closing arguments will be Monday. I'll be watching. We'll see how the closing arguments come across. But this was a trial that should have lasted no more than about 3 days, but it drug on for over almost 2 weeks now. Cut to the chase, not a whole lot of disputed facts. Jury needs to decide reckless, negligence, or not guilty. It's that simple. Next on the docket, Ghislaine Maxwell's lawyers have indicated that they could rest their case as early as this afternoon or maybe Monday morning. Now, if I was trying that case, which I'm not, I would try to drag it out so that I could have the weekend to make sure to see if there's anything else I want to put on as evidence. You have the weekend to think about it, let your client think whether they want to testify or not. If the defense is going to rest, it would seem as though Miss Maxwell would not be testifying at her trial. Now, as you may recall, this trial began on November 29th, which would make today the end of the third week of trial that was originally supposed to go for 6 weeks for the prosecution's case. Ghislaine Maxwell's second day of presenting a defense got off to a bit of a rocky start when it emerged that one witness refused to respond to a subpoena and another said that they would take the fifth, which means that they cannot be called as a witness, and a third witness was not being called. Now, the defense was able to call a witness by the name of Dr. Eva Anderson, an internist and former girlfriend of that guy named Jeff for 11 years. She is now married to a hedge fund billionaire by the name of Glenn Dubin, who was previously accused of allegedly having a relationship with Virginia Roberts when she was an underage teen. He, of course, has denied those allegations. Jane claimed that Eva had taken part in orgies with other women and that guy named Jeff down in Palm Beach during the 90s. Eva denied any of that in her testimony today. Now, in 1994, Anderson married Dubin, but said that she stayed friendly with that man named Jeff and socialized with him and flew on his private plane, including with her three children. Now, one of Ghislaine Maxwell's defense attorneys, Jeff Pagliuca, asked Anderson if she was comfortable with that man named Jeff's relationship with her children, and she said that she was. she said they had an uncle-like relationship. Now, Anderson was shown a number of flight log entries from that guy named Jeff's plane, including one where she is listed as flying with Jane. They asked if she remembered ever meeting Jane, and Miss Anderson said, "I don't recall ever meeting this person." Palyka showed Miss Anderson a photo that was found inside of that guy named Jeff's house, which she said showed her youngest daughter, his goddaughter, to Anderson, said that she's never seen this picture before in a moment that appeared to surprise the defense. Now, during cross-examination, the prosecutors asked Miss Anderson if she knew that between 1994 and 2000, she knew if that man named Jeff and Miss Maxwell were in a relationship, an open relationship, I should say. And she replied, "I couldn't really say whether they did or did not." Anderson did confirm that she was having issues with her memory due to a medical condition, which she did not specify, although she has publicly described having a battle with breast cancer. She said, "It's very hard for me to remember anything far back. Sometimes I can't even remember things from last month." Some courtroom observers noted that as Miss Anderson walked into the courtroom, Miss Maxwell turned her head around and looked to the door and followed her with her eyes as she walked up to the witness stand. I'm not particularly surprised about that, but some people in the courtroom thought it was significant, apparently. So we'll have to wait and see how things turn out for that trial. Obviously, anytime the defense calls witnesses, you create situations where things don't go exactly the way you'd hope they would. Sometimes less is more, and I'm simply saying I have won more trials where the defense doesn't present any evidence at all. And why is that important? Well, I think that's because the jury looks at the evidence that they have instead of all of a sudden now just thinking about, did we believe what the defense said or not? Almost kind of a burden shifting kind of thing. And if you don't have anything to consider, you just have to look at the weight of the government's evidence and whether the defense was able to poke enough holes in their theory. Remember that guy named Harvey? I think we can say Harvey the movie producer. Well, he's now serving a 23-year sentence regarding his conviction in New York, and he's also facing additional charges in California that carry an additional 140 years. But on Wednesday, the appeals court judges that were hearing his appeal questioned the trial court's decision to allow testimony from three witnesses who claimed that Harvey, the former movie executive, had sexually assaulted them, although the allegations weren't eligible to be charged for a variety of reasons. The justices questioned whether that testimony did more to doubt Harvey, the former movie producer's character, than to shed light on his guilt or innocence. Justice Judith Gish said he doesn't get convicted because he's a bad guy. He gets convicted for these particular crimes. That guy named Harvey, the former movie producers, well, his attorneys were clearly elated with the oral arguments and stated, "I don't think that it could have gone any better." Now, the prosecutors argued to the justices that the trial judge had balanced their rulings and excluded some of the evidence sought by the prosecution. Now, others pointed out that the justices' questions don't necessarily mean that guy named Harvey, the former movie producer, will be freed or get a new trial. They could, for example, fault the trial judge's ruling, but say that it didn't affect the outcome of the trial. That's the classic, although there was error, it was harmless in light of the overwhelming evidence. However, I said at the time that this trial was going on, if the prosecution's case is so strong and these witnesses are so credible, you don't need to bring in 404B evidence. That guy named Harvey was allowed to be tried on these charges and these charges alone and not have some woman that didn't come forward some 20 years prior and barred by the statute of limitations in another jurisdiction hear about how he allegedly did bad things. That is propensity evidence. That is what is specifically prohibited under the law. The courts have allowed more and more of that crap in over the years, and they're finally starting to bring it back and say, you can't do this, trial court. It was the same thing that was considered in the Bill Cosby case as well. I don't know what the justices will do, but I have to agree with that guy named Harvey and his attorneys that it probably could not have gone better. 404B evidence, they use that. And remember, when you hear this in a courtroom, that means the government's case is weak, weak, weak. And it should come back and bite them every time. And if that guy named Harvey gets a new trial, there's only two people to blame: the judge for not having the guts to say it's not coming in, and two, the prosecutors for trying to bring it in and get cute and try to dance around the rule that you can't bring in propensity evidence to say, we think he was a bad guy back then, he must be a bad guy here today. You don't get that in our judicial system. So if it comes back, you got my word right here, blame the prosecutor, blame the judge. Don't blame that guy named Harvey or his attorneys. They were saying what the law is. The judge and the prosecutors ignored it. All right, next on the docket, Alec Baldwin. Do you think he should get worried about now? I would say yes. All right. So now it's been almost 2 months after the fatal shooting on that Rust set, and the cinematographer Helena Hutchinson's was killed by Alec Baldwin. Now, the Santa Fe Police Department has requested a warrant for the search and seizure of Mr. Baldwin's iPhone for more information. The affidavit filed by the Santa Fe Police Department suggests that there is information that is material and relevant to the investigation, and they were also made aware that there were several emails and text messages sent and received regarding the movie production Rust in the course of interviews. Although Baldwin has been said to be cooperative with the police during the investigation, apparently he refused to hand over his phone to the detectives without a warrant. So what exactly is the warrant looking for? Well, I can tell you. Apparently, the police have searched the phone of Helena Hutchins, and the police have discovered conversations about the Rust production dating back to July 14th of 2021. And according to the police officer writing this affidavit, they also discovered photographs of receipts in the phone dating back to September 7th of 2021, showing various receipts at businesses in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The police believe that gathering information prior to the film's start date of Rust is essential to a full investigation. The police note in their affidavit that they requested of Mr. Baldwin, as well as through his attorneys, that they would like to have his phone, and they were instructed to get a warrant. The police officers state that Mr. Baldwin has contacted the police several times through phone calls and text messages using the number listed. Therefore, the police believe that this is the phone number that Alec Baldwin uses on a regular basis. The police officer states that he is aware of the entire cell phone number. However, he's redacted the beginning of that number for confidentiality and privacy of Mr. Baldwin. The affidavit also seeks not only the phone, but obviously to search text messages received between the defendant and the police officers that may appear, as well as on any Apple device or storage unit. The police also believe that there may be evidence on the phone due to the individuals using cell phones during and or after the commission of the crime. If such information exists, it may be material regarding the movie production Rust, as well as interviews. Well, isn't that interesting? As we all know, Alec Baldwin did an interview, 2 weeks ago now, with George Stephanopoulos. It was a puff piece, to say the least. And of course, Alec Baldwin made statements in that interview, which he is now forever locked into. And guess what? They are somewhat contradictory to statements made previously, apparently by Mr. Baldwin, as well as the armorer, as stated in the affidavit. We do know that when Mr. Baldwin was brought in on the date of the shooting at approximately 5:12, he was advised of his Miranda rights and agreed to speak with the detectives. He apparently advised the scene how slowly he takes the gun out of the holster, then he dramatically turns it and cocks the hammer, which is when the gun goes off. He said it was supposed to be a cold gun, so no flash charge or anything should have gone off. According to Alec Baldwin, he stated all the rounds in the gun were supposed to be cosmetic or dummy rounds, although Alec advised when the gun went off, he could recall Helena Hutchinson going down to the ground and Joel Souza start to scream. Alec Baldwin said that he was in rehearsal and he assumed the gun was empty. Boom. Negligent, based upon what should have been done on the scene. Alec Baldwin described his pistol as a period Colt pistol, and he said that there were emails transferred back and forth between Hannah and him, Hannah's the armorer, where she showed him different styles of firearms, and he said he requested a bigger gun. And she also showed him different styles of knives for the production. Alec was shown a Colt with a brown handle and a cherry handle, and he ultimately chose the one with the brown handle. Now, they state that in the phone search of Helena Hutchinson, they discovered conversations going back to July 14th, and there were receipts and other information in there. Now, they request a phone from Mr. Baldwin, basically to get the other side of those conversations if they were not, in fact, recorded. But you can see, ladies and gentlemen, why, when there's a criminal investigation, you never say a word. It's better to look guilty than to be found guilty. And usually when a defendant gets convicted, and obviously Alec Baldwin has not been accused of anything, and we'll give him the presumption of innocence, but it's usually the defendant's own words that get them convicted. We'll see what happens. Obviously, the police had the court sign the affidavit for the search warrant of his phone. He has to produce it. Otherwise, he could be guilty of a crime of destruction of evidence. That would be bad for Mr. Baldwin. And now, since this is such a public affair, so to speak, it looks like he may be hiding something now, doesn't it? Or is he just telling the government, oh, that's right, get a warrant? Should have listened to his attorney's advice early on. And these people, the police, are doing their investigation. What Mr. Baldwin doesn't realize is they're not his friends. He should have kept his mouth shut. We'll see how that turns out for Mr. Baldwin. That's for sure. All right, before we get to the next story, let's take a quick recess. And when you hear this story, yeah, you're definitely going to want to use the product as described in the recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. Remember that guy, John Griffin, we talked about? Was it last week, I think? I think it was last week. John Griffin, he is the former producer for now former host Chris Cuomo at CNN. Well, it's being reported that he hosted sleepovers and pool parties with friends of his three young children while being investigated for sexually assaulting a nine-year-old girl. Now, Griffin was arrested on December 10th in Connecticut on a federal indictment out of Vermont for allegedly soliciting three mothers to have sexual acts done with their underage daughters. Now, Griffin is alleged to have paid the mother $3,350 so that he could allegedly sexually abuse the child. Now, Griffin, who's 44, and his wife, Allison, who's 46, hosted children's parties at their $4 million mansion overlooking the Long Island Sound in Wilson Point, Connecticut. Federal authorities were made aware of these allegations and on September 2nd, 2020, seized computers, storage media, devices, phone cameras, micro cards, images, and video from Mr. Griffin, according to court records. But the police waited another 16 months before arresting the TV producer, leaving him free to interact with young children who were friends with his own kids. Now, a federal grand jury in Vermont obviously indicted Mr. Griffin on these three counts of using a facility of interstate commerce to attempt to entice minors to engage in unlawful activity. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's just say what it is. I have said this before, and I get a lot of flack for it. Scott, you're not being the fun guy. You're being a fun hater. And I'm not saying that Mr. Griffin has done anything inappropriate. But as a criminal defense attorney, I can tell you that I have lots of cases. And where do lots of allegations of sexual assaults come up? Sleepovers. Okay? I'm the fun hater. Okay? Let's just get that straight. I'm the fun hater. But I've seen more circumstances come out of sleepovers than you can possibly imagine. If they're young kids, you got to be very careful as to who's going to be there. If you have older kids, the only reason older kids have sleepovers is so that they can go do what they don't get to do at home. Bottom line, okay? And it usually involves sneaking out, going out, doing drugs, drinking, or having sex with other people. I know, I'm a fun hater, but I see more than most people see in a lifetime of bad, horrific situations, okay? It's just like the guy that lives in the basement with his mom when he's 40 years old and he works at a pizza place that caters to children, right? And then everybody seems shocked when they find a bunch of stuff on their computer, right? They shouldn't be. Why? Because that's where the kids are. People that like to be around young children, right? They're going to put themselves in places and circumstances which allow them to, for lack of a better term, get their weird freak on. And in this particular case, the allegation is that Mr. Griffin, although he's only been accused, not convicted yet, of being a pedophile, it would seem like he's putting himself in lots of situations where he could be around children. Use your common sense, ladies and gentlemen. Now, before we get to the dumb criminal of the day, I think that several politicians must have been watching Crime Talk, because just yesterday, the San Francisco mayor, who previously wanted to defund the police and thought that the police and judicial system was nothing but a racist institution, has now changed her tune and now completely wants to make sure that the police have the resources and that they aggressively pursue and punish criminals. Like I said, I guess she's been watching the episodes of Crime Talk where I say, let's use some common sense. We'll see how things turn out. See if the voters will remember their complete wrong decisions by voting day. Usually most people forget about that. We'll just have to wait and see. All right. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. Alvis Lorraine Parrish admitted to poisoning her longtime boyfriend by spiking his lemonade with an antipsychotic medication. Because why? He wouldn't stop talking. She stated when the police arrived, yeah, I did it because he wouldn't shut the F up, she told the police, adding that she knew she gave him enough Seroquel to quiet him down, but not enough to kill him. Now, the man initially refused to go to the hospital, but then had trouble filling out a report for alleged domestic battery abuse because he was so lethargic and he couldn't figure out why he was so lethargic. Well, now Ms. Parrish remains in jail on a $50,000 bond. She was charged with poisoning the food or water with intent to kill or injure a person. Now remember, Seroquel is given to people oftentimes suffering from schizophrenia. Pretty powerful drug. Can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. Wouldn't you like to be able to do that sometimes when people just keep talking? No, you can't do that. That's called, it's illegal. Let's do a quick recap. Monday, the 76-year-old Patsy Morrell was arrested for allegedly targeting her 74-year-old ex-boyfriend, Stephen Hughes, and his new girlfriend by writing "loves kinky sex" on his car and leaving a dead raccoon on her car. Next, Patrick Beeman of Sheboygan, Michigan, who's known as a serial toilet clogger. That's right, after finally being caught, Mr. Patrick was sentenced to 150 days in jail for his trail of toilet destruction. Wednesday, we had the drunk pilot who crashed his plane in a street in Indiana. Fortunately, he was able to land, not injure himself or others, but he was busted because he was drunk. 8 hours, bottle the throttle, ladies and gentlemen, whether it's a car or an airplane. And then yesterday, we had Mr. McRoberts Williams. He robbed a Wells Fargo in Delaware, walked out the front door, and put the money into an ATM and deposited that stolen money into his account. Have to remember that Mr. Williams claimed that his mind is currently being controlled by a third party via an implant located somewhere in his body. So, although a dumb criminal, sounds like he's not going to be declared competent to stand trial or accept a plea anytime soon. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. Remember, hey, it's almost Christmas. If you want to get that Crime Talk gear, simply hit the link below and get it before Christmas is here. You'll be happy you did. It's good stuff. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.